Okay, this is session 8 on July 10th, 2006. And we're starting off at page 11 at the top, and these are quotes from McLuhan on page 11. We're going to start to read the first one, which is from page 60 of Understanding Media.
Yeah. The owners themselves are concerned more about the media as such and are not inclined to go beyond, quote, what the public wants, unquote, or some vague formula. Owners are aware of the media's power, and they know that this power has little to do with, quote, unquote, content or the media within the media.
Yeah, now, you got anything to say about that?
Let's see, the owners are concerned more, are concerned about the media as such and not inclined to go beyond what the public wants. So they're throttling themselves a little bit, trying to manage what the public wants by polling the public, finding out what the public wants, and then sort of reflecting that back to the public so the public doesn't get frantic or feel that they're not getting what they want. Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, he's saying this is the basic point that the form and the power of the form is way stronger than any content. So whatever the public seems to favor for values in their content or for titillation, it doesn't lead to anarchy or rebellion as they felt in the 19th century that certain ideas would make people want to throw over the class structure and ouster the owners. The owners here know that it's almost like they don't need to be visible. Isn't it in that quote, Big Brother quote? Big Brother goes inside on page at the top of page 7. As our senses have gone outside, as Big Brother goes inside. So think of the owners as a parallel or part of the Big Brother government structure. So McLuhan's implying here that there's some kind of effect of electronic media that they want, that the owners need. And
they're propping up a fake class structure because kind of there is no class structure, really, in terms of tetrad management. It's the content is a hallucination, and they're trying to fit the hallucination to the public awareness.
Right, so the owners are in a way, preserving their own comfortable status by being invisible. And as long as people are involved in the electronic media vortex, they don't and can't find the owners. So the owners, it seems that these owners are 19th century guys addicted to the comfort that their wealth gives them.
Money wealth or...
yeah, money wealth.
Software wealth. Yeah.
Because... they don't seem to be concerned about the effects of the media other than as a numbing thing. But McLuhan's going to point out that the owners are making a mistake here, that the society's going to get totally out of control even though the owners are not visible. And
so the owners are not public recognizable figures?
Right. And later... he talks about the owners being harassed bureaucrats, and in the early 70s, he says they have to go into politics to control. So they actually, by the time Nelson Rockefeller goes into the vice presidential position in 74, under Gerald Ford after Nixon's been kicked out, there's a sense of panic where they seem to need to control the content at some level. They have to become visible. So that's an interesting effect that we'll get into later.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting is that this statement shows an earlier McLuhan. It's not clear what advantages the owners get other than their own comfort.
Well, now there's this distinction here to be made because there's the owners and then there's the managers.
Yes.
The owners are the guys who think in terms of money wealth, but money wealth is already obsolete. So the managers are dealing with software wealth, which is a different arena.
That's right. And that's why McLuhan said in the late 20s, you know, during the crash, the owners gave up the system. And the managers took over in the 30s, he said. And then he said advertising took over in the 40s. So the virtual design of society through advertising was the real power within the content, within the media. And the owners were on the sidelines from that point on, because money in the 30s became public property. So what, it's a good question about who are the owners and what are they doing, since they're on the sidelines and they have their own accumulated wealth, but the managers run it. It seems that they're sort of like Olympian gods, just basking in their little luxury zones, and they don't want to be disturbed. That seems to be the vision of these guys in the 40s and 50s. Yes, and they are the owners. They are not the managers.
Now, are the managers still controlling things when advertising becomes the managing force? Or does advertising just run itself based on polls, and it's kind of like a cybernetic thing? Polls
right.
determine the advertising, and advertising determines the polls. And
yeah, and the managers would be the ones who would determine the particular values of the local area that cannot be violated by the advertising. So the managers are local focus group beings who can tell the advertisers what kind of ads to make. Because you'd have the larger advertising campaign, then you'd have the local demographic design. So the managers would be a subset of the advertisers. They would be involved with that control. So what's interesting is that this statement about McLuhan, about the owners by McLuhan, is a way of McLuhan, who's aware that the people are reading Understanding Media in 1964, you know nothing about media, and having fantasies of maybe the students are into Marxist takeover and that, and they don't know that the owners of the system aren't where Marxists or socialists or class warfare or fascists think the owners are. And there is no position of ownership to take over, almost.
Well, aren't the owners running behind the scenes of the sort of fascist international corporate banking scene?
Well, the owners, if there are any of them involved, would be just concerned about new technologies and maybe where to invest their money and keep their position of comfort. Mm-hmm. So they're sort of looking at the effects. But I don't want to go into that yet, because that will come later and there's some more quotes. But this is McLuhan basically educating a 19th-century mind, the average technological, what we'll call the fluent techno-peasant of the 20th century, who has no clue about anything in terms of what's really going on in the global theater of the 60s, because Sputnik has happened by the time Understand Media's come up. So this is a one level of education, taking the concept of the owners and explaining something about them, so that you would look at the ownership syndrome differently. So then you would go to the next quote, where he would start to give some more details.
Leasing our eyes?
Yeah, now that would be, this is Understanding Media, page 73. And this is Understanding Media, the paperback version, put out in the 60s by McGraw-Hill, and is not the pages numbers for the MIT production that came out in 94. The MIT reprint.
Mm-hmm, okay. Leasing our eyes and ears and nerves to commercial interests.
I was just thinking, in light of what we just said, I'll just reread the quote above we just did,
mm-hmm.
and just say it rapidly. The owners themselves are concerned more about the media as such. Now, they're concerned. That means they're wondering how it's going to go, just like they're concerned about new technologies and what they will do. So the owners themselves are concerned more about the media as such, and are not inclined to go beyond what the public wants or some vague formula. Owners are aware of the media's power, and they know that this power has little to do with the content or the media within the media. So the owners at that point are looking at what new technologies are coming and what effects of those are going to happen. And they do that through their intelligence systems and their ownership of the laboratories where new technologies are invented.
Mm-hmm.
That's, in some way, that's why, you know, the classic American cliche of the American do-it-yourself garage inventor makes pretty amazing inventions, but he has no corporate ground to introduce it in. And so that old stereotype of the American inventor is it's a figure without a ground. And the reason corporations, you have to invent within corporation structures, is that so that the owners can evaluate the potential upsetting of the already existing power arrangements dictated by the media of that phase, how much those are vulnerable to new technology. And then that becomes a a fantasy by the 70s where people are were talking in fringe media about how this amazing hydro fuel tank was suppressed by Ford or General Motors. And that seems to become a general awareness by the 70s that the corporations are doing what we would call tetra management or media ecology. They're suppressing any technologies that really would upset the whole structure that's built on the oil consciousness, and also the structure of the TV media. So I just want to say about the owners themselves are concerned, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're paying attention to, new media and their environmental potentials. The content doesn't matter because the content is not access to the environmental stick shift.
Mm-hmm.
The environmental wheels, which is actually owning media environments and being able to determine what directions they go in.
Yeah. But, I mean, the bottom line is they're concerned about wealth as money. I mean, if they want to suppress energy technology.
No, they're aware of media as power, not wealth and money. I mean, they need that to get a certain position, but once they're there, then they're involved with intelligence agencies and gauging what new technologies are coming, whether they should invest in them or not, and whether they would undermine the technologies they're already invested in.
Right, because they're concerned about their financial wealth.
And they're concerned about their position of prestige and power and whatever satisfaction they get from that comfortable position.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, they may even be very aggressive personality types who have to always be competing,
mm-hmm.
like an intense hockey game or something. And they like the adrenaline rush of looking around for new technologies and then trying to take them over or suppressing them. So you get personality types coming in here. But the main point to understand is that there are huge power bureaucracies built with any new media. Like, what is the power bureaucracy that comes in with the Internet? You know, what would come in with cold fusion? What came in with cable TV? So,
These technologies are decentralizing, so it seems like it would break up centers of power.
Centers of national 19th century newspaper print powers. Once you are in a position of power on the electrical scale, you have power everywhere. You're not decentralized. You're in the middle. You're in the fulcrum point, which is the environment you're owning and manipulating.
Mm-hmm.
The decentralization is only in effect for the centralized industrial structures.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And the family structures and the schools and all that literate society structured around the newspaper and books and cash money, printed money, that structure is what is upset and has regular apocalypse and all kinds of unforeseen conflicts and the need for Valium.
Yeah. Now, this quote from Understanding Media was 1964. When was Kennedy assassinated?
This book came out about 6 months after Kennedy was assassinated, in May 64.
Right. So, does what we're talking about here, the forces we're talking about, play into the assassination of Kennedy?
Yeah. As I say in the Bosmi Ecology Squared album, the charismatic power of the Kennedy image on television threatened the bureaucratic intelligence agency sense of comfort and power, and they became concerned about the content effect of Kennedy's image. And Kennedy took advantage of that charisma and tried to change the system, at least change some factors of bureaucracy that emanates from Washington. So, for example, he was going to fire Hoover, and he got rid of Alan Dulles of the CIA. That kind of bureaucratic sniping is going to cause some bruised egos.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a general paranoia about these people not the power bureaucrats on the intelligence agencies levels not understanding the effect of television, especially as the satellite environment went around it, making television a more potent figure, whereas it was ground in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting into the... Once you get into the satellite environment, then content becomes the source of power, because the media are starting to implode. And there's no divisions between TV, satellite, books, computers, and radio. And movies, they start to become what McLuhan called the prince of the air, master of software and hardware, an electric engineer. Mm-hmm. So this implosion, and in a sense where the user becomes the content and power becomes the content, Kennedy got caught in the crossfire of that effect. But that is something we'll discuss later, because we're just laying down the difference between form and content here, between medium and message first. That's the first thing to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's the knowledge up to 1960. But then the nature of the medium after 1960 is imploded such that, as my chart shows, the word makes the market. And the word comes out of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And to understand the depth of that is what we're working towards.
Yeah. Well, that these guys took Kennedy out implies that they wanted to take control of the White House so that they could be the word that comes out of the White House.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and the word is an image. It's not just what's said. It's an image of control. Now, there's massive insecurity going on at that point because the Soviet Union seems to be becoming a strong factor in the Third World, and it's making moves on the threat of nuclear war. So it's a very nervous time, and it's an effect. And then China gets nervous, and they start having Maoist revolutions, the Children's Crusade and all that, that they had in the middle 60s. All bureaucratic government structures, even that are part of the secret Big Brother network, are not able to handle the movement into this total software implosion, which makes not only nations obsolete, but corporate management obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
So let's leave that. It's much like the Bond movies reflect this. It's always one guy against a guy who's going to take over the whole world, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's getting into one-on-one.
Right.
Relationships. It's like knights fighting in the medieval period. One estate represented by a knight has to fight another estate.
Right.
Represented by a knight. And everybody just services that environment, but only two people engage in battle, whereas the 19th and early part of the 20th century were industrialized mass armies that fought for national icons, national languages. And now it's coming down to a yin-yang here,
yeah.
And almost a Gnostic vision between the forces of light and forces of darkness. And McLuhan talked about how in the 60s, in the electric imploded global theater, you appeared either as an angel or as a devil.
Yeah.
So, that's interesting, that effect.
These guys who were scrambling to try to manage the effects of technology, you know, people like Rockefeller come to mind, but the media is proliferating on an international scale. It is affecting the players in China and Russia and
Third World everywhere.
In America. Yeah. So are there international players of different ethnic descent or is it all being controlled by Western guys?
McLuhan writes in Cultures Are Business that the modern corporation committees and tops of the corporations is made up of utterly unlike entities. It's a good phrase, because the implosion of all these previous media environments, like the wealth that the Nazis developed during the radio era, the wealth that the Bolsheviks got during the radio era, in the TV era, the wealth that Israel gets in the 1560s as it becomes a strong country, a little country in the Middle East. And then you have the rise of the Latin American countries and Africa. It's basically a lot of chaos going on. But they're all inside the satellite environment. So when you read the image people have of reading McLuhan, or the image of what he talked about, they'll say, oh, he's the guy who talked about television, which is a total 50s image of McLuhan. McLuhan in the 60s, when he's doing Understanding Media, he's writing about the effects of computer and satellites. But this is such an invisible environment, nobody even sees that. They don't even get it from his writing, even though at the end of the book he's got a couple chapters on it. So they just see this TV. So people are living one phase back. And the managers of wealthy, what McClellan called the emperors of all kinds of major media environments, they are gradually forced to sit in the room with them. So in law enforcement, the mafia became part of the police forces and became part of the intelligence forces, and because they had a collection of wealth built up in the 50s, 60s during the Rat Club era. What was it called? The Rat Pack era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sinatra and Dean Martin and that period out of Las Vegas. The television environment is starting to make people want drugs. In the suburbia, in the middle class area where drugs weren't as prominent, not the heroin and cocaine, marijuana, and LSD and that kind of stuff, the mafia was able to make a lot of money out of that. And so they become important. Now, in this satellite imploded environment, paper money is obsolete. So what's next? It's cash flow. And you have a credit society. So you need to have a daily flow of cash. And where are you going to get it? Well, you have to do a lot of drug smuggling and selling of drugs and cash turnover.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to make people buy silly products that are advertised every day. So what's called the consumerism of the 60s, the beginning of materialism, consumerism, which the average social critic will cite, is the content and necessary generation of cash inside a world that doesn't run by cash anymore. So it's like the panic of cash.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the trivial products that are, you know, like the electric toothbrush or something that are symptomatic of the 60s and 70s are necessary for the communication between all the environments, and the byproduct of that communication is cash flow.
Yeah.
And that's going to get into
cash flow. We can't have cash flow without computer accounting systems and telephone lines as ways of transferring.
Yeah, that you get in the 70s and 80s, that's the credit crunch, and that caused a big crisis in the late 70s, leading to Paul Volcker's, you know, huge inflation, interest rates. Okay, and that phenomenon of stagflation, but we're back into the 60s here. And so people don't even know that technological inventions create environments that condition the way they look at things and the way they miss the present and why they live several phases back.
So you're saying the chip was not a significant factor in the 60s?
No. The computer environment was being built, but that was mainframe computers, and that was important on the level of Big Brother.
Because without the computers, you can't really have credit. I mean, you don't have a bunch of guys with pencils and papers tracking everyone's credit.
Yeah, but that's the late 60s. We're talking the middle 60s here. Computers are starting to come in. I think it was in the computerized international banking started in 66, I think. Rockefeller set that up.
Mm-hmm.
But the military bureaucracies are developing computers, you know, through DARPA and that. You know, the whole Internet starts being built out of the company BBN, which was a spinoff from MIT in 1960. BBN, I can't remember what they stood for. BB&N, which is interesting. BB is 22, 22, and N is a 14. So you have 22/14, which is a code on my computer, on my chart, and that's a code for the beginning of the Android meme. So the Android meme starting to get built in 1960 with the developing of a new kind of semi-chip technology in the early 60s. And that gets really rolling in 69 when they start hooking up the computers and having them talk back and forth. That happens in Stanford and Los Angeles, I think, in September 69. But let's...
Money flipped into credit in the 30s, right?
Beg your pardon?
Money flipped into credit in the 30s with the New Deal?
Not really. It was the GI Bill, I think. After World War II, they started giving loans to GIs coming back from Europe and Asia, and allowed them to build their suburban house, raise families, and go to school. The credit boom, credit maybe technically started in the 30s after money was no longer private property and as part of New Deal, but it really gets rolling as an environment in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a product of the TV period,
mm-hmm.
The TV and the beginning of the computer.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I mean, it seems to me you have to have the computer if you're going to start tracking credit because... I don't know.
See, in the 50s, yeah, you do, but that's later. That's digital technology allows to do that. Analog computers can't do that.
Yeah.
It's real slow and cumbersome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 50s are, on the computer level, huge, big, cumbersome things that only major corporations and government bureaucracies have.
Yeah.
You haven't got into the Android meme phase where technology becomes friendly to you, and you can have massive environments shrunk down to tiny levels, and you can edit them.
Mm-hmm.
So back to this point, though. See, so we're beginning with, McLuhan's trying to educate, because remember, Gutenberg Galaxy, the book 2 years before Understanding Media, is about the history of literacy. It just begins to touch on the electric age. But now he's going to deal with the 20th century, and people don't even know what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're reading in Understanding Media, as I have at the beginning of the McLuhan Quadrant, are early McLuhan quotes moving you through the education. But the thinking McLuhan is doing in 64 privately, and what he's planning out to express, and what he's to, and the new effects of the global theater he's noticing, that isn't written into Understanding Media. Understanding Media is like a summation of his 50 stuff with a bit of Sputnik effect thrown in.
Mm-hmm.
So this is early McLuhan. So let's do the next quote.
Okay.
Will help us understand what he's dealing with.
I just want to clarify one thing, and that is when I asked you about the nationality of the major players behind the scenes, you named the emperors, and mostly we were talking American, European countries with Israel thrown into the mix. But was Asia and China and India, were they even on the map at that time?
Oh yeah. And here's the thing. When you brought in the Sputnik, and then you had the satellite effect creating an intensification of the Cold War, Khrushchev is knocked out in 64, Brezhnev comes in, and there's a new the period of detente that Khrushchev, Eisenhower, and the Pope John the 23rd, they were, and Kennedy were making feelers to create a rapprochement within the 50s Cold War. They were doing this in the early 60s. Pope John 23rd dies, I think, in 63. Kennedy dies in 63, and Khrushchev is ousted in 64. So there's a new intensity and paranoia happening among the international corporate elites who are not involved with any nations particularly. They're managing radio environments, TV and satellite environments. The Pentagon in the 60s had to immediately put in dictatorships all over the world, wherever they could, to have a global intercom so that they could have instant communication in response to the perceived threat of the Soviet bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So think of it as a global intercom that's being set up. And these massive environments, massive effects caused by the satellite leads to coups in Brazil and coups all over the place, and it's a panic by Big Brother to maintain a sense of control of their positions of comfort, and they probably even exaggerated the power of the Soviet military. But it wasn't really that was the issue. It was the fact that people were inside the same space. Whole cultures were inside the same space. It's just like when French Canada, Quebec, and that started getting television and radio, they got tense because the English visage, the English accent, the English language was coming into their French Montreal, Quebec City homes. And this is called tribal paranoia. It was just too claustrophobic. Because, you know, you got these people with distinct sense of cultures. All of a sudden, they got television. They got these English people talking to them in their home, right? And so think that's a cultural thing in Canada. Think of the power structures, the different parts of the Big Brother that George Orwell lays out, you know, different divisions, the what I call the world government and the solar government. They're all in touch with each other so close that it's hard to determine where the boundaries are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to make things pretty tense.
Because
these are people, these powerful bureaucrats and military generals and intelligence agents, they're people who grew up in the 20s and 30s and 40s with perceptual habits. They were racist, you know, they didn't have much interaction with many other kinds of cultures. If they did, it was during World War II, and that was under pretty strange situations, interacting with other people. And so all of a sudden in the 60s, they're all sitting in the same room, and these people have pretty ossified perceptual habits that can deal with the present.
Mm-hmm.
So as you get on my chart, you'll have all kinds of symptoms of paranoia, schizophrenia, hysteria, panic, and ecstasy, you know. So that's some of the side effects. So let's look at the next quote and see if that fits.
Okay. Well, I just need a little more amplification here. The guy, when you said, let's see, Kennedy was taken out, then Khrushchev, and who, Stalin, or who was the other player?
Pope John XXIII.
Oh, Pope, yeah. Now, were these guys taken out by the same, same motivation, by the same players?
I don't know if John XXIII was murdered. I don't think so. He just died, but he was an important liberal pope who was playing down the Cold War paranoia of the late 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And Khrushchev and Eisenhower and then Kennedy were making overtures in 62, 63 through the Vatican to sort of move out of a Cold War posture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kennedy was killed for local American reasons.
By the mob, principally by the mob.
Well, that was one factor, but I'm not going to go into it on tape.
Okay.
But the, you know, it's like McLuhan said, who killed Kennedy? He said the establishment killed Kennedy. When you understand what the establishment is, then that is an accurate statement.
Mm-hmm.
You have a military footing once Kennedy's out, and a movement into Vietnam, and the KGB would be aware of this, so Soviet KGB, so they would bring in a hardline posture that Khrushchev was not up to.
Mm-hmm.
So they brought in Brezhnev.
Mm-hmm.
So the paranoia, every new technology creates paranoia. So when the satellite environment, you can say the 60s, in so many ways, was not caused by television, but by the paranoia that the satellite computer global theater caused.
Mm-hmm.
So you got paranoia going on. In the sense of the old hardware military-industrial complex of the 50s, they are feeling claustrophobic, and especially in response to Russia, apparently, Soviet Union going ahead in the space race, they're feeling claustrophobic, so they want to start moving out of the boundaries of the United States and Europe and sort of get a lock on Asia. So they're looking for new ground, physical ground, to prop up their hardware society. So in that paranoia, they move into a Vietnam War posture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one corporation, the military-industrial complex. There's around that is the television corporations, the computer corporations, the old media corporations, the oil corporations, and mineral corporations, and food corporations, and all inside this
mm-hmm.
global theater of instant implosion.
They're all dancing around, hot-footing it, trying to figure out what to do next, but you wouldn't go so far to say there were players that were manipulating all those factions.
No, the Rumpelstiltskins in the interval, they manipulated the situation by just knowing who was doing what to who. It's like McLuhan's metaphor of the shepherd. They're watching the sheep. Look at all these different media sheep. The shepherd king is people in the intelligence agencies, both well-known, like Alan Dulles, or not known, maybe like someone like Theodore Shackley. These people interacting with other corporate owners who are not even involved in intelligence but have their own interfaces with it, this is why McLuhan said it was an information environment, that the information was the ground.
So their game, by watching what's going on between
everybody,
they're gaming the system to enhance their own power, prestige, and wealth.
Actually, they're just maintaining their position.
Mm.
That's all it is. Is it, you know, by the 60s, the human control is pretty limited. That's why the wealthy people becomes a harassed bureaucrat, because you got to do so much and be in touch with his networks to maintain a sense of knowing what's going on, his need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, people, you know, you with the wealth of the 50s and on, people have cars and guns and weapons, and anybody can do anything. Your citizenry is turned into cyborgs, you know, mobile cyborgs, and you don't know what little gangs are forming that might do some strange acts and interfere with you. So, you know, the image of the president going around this with the security, an innocent person in the 50s might say, well, what do you mean? He's my president. Why does he need all this security? You know, he's just a guy I know. I like him. You know, come over and talk, shake hands. Mm-hmm. But the security represents the unpredictability of massive invaders from all over the world, from all over different media environments. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Kennedy himself was fired at several times before he was killed. Who was trying to shoot him? Mm-hmm. He was aware of it. So, and that's just one particular situation. There's all kinds of power struggles going on in every level of social groupings and business structures.
Yeah.
Because there is no human scale at that point. The only human scale is that people can get pretty interesting weaponry and on the black market and organize. I mean, with a plane, you can fly anywhere in the world, get some drugs, sell them, get $10 million in 1960, and then set up some kind of army somewhere in the Congo or someplace.
Wow.
That's the decentralization for the hardware world. And you get a lot of crazy personalities doing that, and psychopaths. So, you know, Hollywood and entertainment made movies about this all the time. Catch a normal fare on television.
You think the Bay of Pigs was blown out of proportions? Or the Cuban Missile Crisis, I'm sorry.
No, that was important. That was probably, other than in Gerald Ford's period in 1975, this coming close to having an actual nuclear discharge, because the missiles, no one really knew how accurate they would be, but you'd fire them off and they'd go somewhere. The Cuban Missile Crisis was the closest that humans came to that, and then it was replayed under Ford. Nobody knows about that. And just as a little side thing, who were the people in the Ford cabinet at that time in the Ford administration? It was Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney. And if we're at some crisis period now, they come back in, are brought back in under President Bush administration, because they were experienced and know where the bodies are buried or what happened and the hidden stresses that happened during the Ford administration. They're qualified to understand maybe what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the popular level, they don't understand what's going on,
yeah,
because they can't communicate to that level, and they're not talking to people, to Americans. They're dealing with some power paranoia within invisible structures that have been set up since 1975. Joseph, I think his name, Trento. Anyways, a recent book about the Safari Club, which is the outsourcing of the CIA and its intelligence capacities to the Saudi Arabia gang. That was done in the mid-70s. And that was probably a byproduct of the Rumsfeld Ford administration with Dick Cheney, that period. And so all of the intelligence activity that led to the Al-Qaeda was set up by the Safari Club in the 70s. And that was, so the intelligence bureaucracies themselves were decentralized.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's getting off on.
Mm.
Let's go to this next quote.
Okay. So, this is also Understanding Media from 1964, page 73. Leasing our eyes, ears, and nerves to commercial interests is like handing over the common speech to a private corporation, or like giving the Earth's atmosphere to a company as a monopoly. Something like this has already happened with outer space, for the same reasons that we have leased our central nervous system to various corporations. As long as we adopt the narcissist attitude of regarding the extensions of our own bodies as really out there, that's italicized.
Yes, really out there.
Out there, yeah. And really independent of us, we will meet all technological challenges with the same sort of banana skin, pirouette, and collapse.
Right, so leasing our eyes and ears and nerves to commercial interests is like handing over the common speech to a private corporation. A lot of metaphors in here, because he considers technologies as extensions of speech, and speech is an extension of our body senses, and so leasing our eyes, ears, and nerves to commercial interests, which is the industrial phase, post-Gutenberg phase, early Marconi phase, in the 19th century, private property phase, is like handing over the common speech to a private corporation. or like giving the Earth's atmosphere to a company as a monopoly. Something like this has already happened with outer space for the same reason that we have leased our central nervous systems to various corporations. So he's trying to show here that the technologies are extensions of us, are part of our body, and they are our eyes and ears, and they are our speech. And he's saying outer space has already been hijacked by what he called the atomic warlords, or NASA, or the Pentagon, or whoever you consider is controlling the space program, space exploration. And McLuhan would consider the outer space as an old extension of the hardware world, so the moving onto the moon is like getting new real estate, whereas actually people were living in the Andromeda strain inside the furthest out environments are swallowed up by the television and computer satellite environments, that you are inside environments, software discarnate post-biological environments that cannot be measured in terms of images of outer space. So this is why outer space, this is in 63, they're just 64, he's saying this. People are just starting to watch John Shepard go around the planet, and those Apollo, what were they called, the we call that sign Pisces, and then because with Chen, what is it? Forget the
Gemini.
What? Gemini was the name of the space program. I think it was the Gemini flights before the Apollo flights. So you got the Gemini phase in 64, and people are just becoming fascinated with the possibility of space travel. And McLuhan's already saying it's hijacked. It's already been released to private corporations. And that's because the real action was happening inside, inner space, the extension of central nervous system. So he says, as long as we adopt the narcissist attitude of regarding the extensions of our own bodies as really out there, that's like space. He's saying, out there. You remember in the 90s? The truth is out there. Wasn't that the X-Files thing?
Yeah.
The truth is out there. That's a projection of the literate person, the visual, what McLuhan called visual space. So the idea that we're going out there into outer space misses the fact that we have gone in there and added new parts onto our bodies, which are new environments, and we're inside them.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been, the content of them have been bought by commercial interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's saying here, he's talking about, he has been saying that the giving the public what it wants is not a big deal. Yet he's complaining here about these environments are owned by or are polluted by content and the control of that content by commercial interests. So as long as we adopt the narcissist attitude of regarding the extensions of our own bodies as and really out there and really independent of us, we will meet all technological challenges, that means new environments and their effects, with the same sort of banana skin pirouette and collapse. We could call the Kennedy assassination as a banana skin pirouette and collapse. It was a desperate move, and since it was quite transparent, it created a lot of cynicism among the entities who believe they were Americans inside visual space boundaries called the United States of America, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then when Bobby was taken out, I can't believe people couldn't connect the dots and realize, you know, something was going on.
Well, people did, but they what were they going to do about it? Yeah. Basically, they said, well, if they can kill the president or they can kill his brother, then they can kill me. So tribal paranoia set in, mafia paranoia. Then Coppola comes along and makes the Godfather series to make people really frightened and to archetypalize the image of tribal overlords running your neighborhood. Running your hood. The hoods run the hood.
Yeah.
So is there something? Okay, so.
So, with respect to this leasing our eyes and ears, I just wanted to bring in that he's pointed out elsewhere that when the senses are embedded in technology, it's a closed system, and that you've lost your imagination.
Yes.
Is that accurate?
Are you watching the clock?
Yeah.
We got
4 minutes.
4 minutes, so. Yes, the imagination embedded in the technologies. That's the narcissist attitude. It's interesting.
The senses, when the senses are embedded in technological extensions, it's a closed system. Well, in a closed system, you're in a cybernetic loop. You know, and you've lost your imagination. You've lost your freedom, your inner freedom of perception.
You've lost the knowledge of how your senses are being changed to want to do other kinds of things. You want to start taking drugs. You want to do this and that. Because your sensory cohesion has been disrupted by the new sensory environments that alter your previous mold. And that'll create an anxiety, an identity crisis, and new kinds of dream fulfillment. It's the attitudes that new media evoke in people, and that is done through their sensory life and its emotional mental reflections. It is that requires a yoga to observe, a media yoga. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, most people today are saying for.
He's saying that the individual can get their freedom of perception back if they do the media yoga and understand the situation they're in.
Yes, if they see how their body and senses are changing and see what's changing. And so your narcissist is...
It's a pretty impossible situation. I mean, if we're all embedded in sensory extensions of technology, and that's a closed system, then we're automatons.
Yes, and McLuhan said we were automatons for 500 years under Gutenberg conditions.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, cyborg is such a ridiculous image. But the popularity of the cyborg image is what you look at. Why is it appealing? What is it that it reinforces for people's identity since they find it hard to see what's really going on?
Yeah.
But you bring...